Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's warming up, at least for a while, but our prolonged period of very cold temperatures has left a lot of homeowners with damage to take care of. We're going to start the hour today talking about frozen pipes. Later on, we will answer your home improvement questions. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. Hello, Bill.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. We got a new comfy chair in the studio, so you look good and relaxed.
Oh, this is sweet. So if I fade away, somebody come over on the other side of the table and slap me around a little bit.
And wake you up.
This is so nice.
You can see a picture of Bill enjoying the new comfy chair on our Twitter feed. You can also ask your home improvement questions there at IPR Talk. And you can call us 866-780-9100. But we're going to start with frozen pipes. That is something a lot of us have experienced in recent weeks. So first, let's start with, okay, you turn on the tap. There's no water. What do you do first, Bill?
Well, the first thing you do is go down to the main shutoff and shut it off because you don't know if there's some water running somewhere in the house that maybe it's frozen where you're at and this maybe pipe is split somewhere else, and get that shut off.
So if you shut that off, you can prevent the burst pipe.
Well, you could if you shut it off. if something is still going, you're cutting it down because, sadly, what's happened is sometimes it'll freeze clear at the other end. Let's say at the end of your water line, you know, maybe it's in a garage where you have some people have, you know, a laundry sinks or something in the garage, or clear at the other end of the house. And we don't know where it's burst, but yet it could be spraying water into your insulation. It could be spraying water, you know, hidden in the walls onto the drywall, which then mold can just take right off, you know, on the paper, on the drywall. So you want to quick, you know, shut that off. So that you can get to the process of either calling a plumber to come as quick as they can. And sometimes this time of year it might take them a little bit. Or, you know, sometimes you can do it yourself. And the downside of doing it yourself, and I used to do this for my wife's grandma all the time. She had a house built in the late 1800s, and it had a crawl space. And we see a lot of homes that were built in the 1900s that have basements and crawl spaces that the plumbing is close to the outside walls, especially in the kitchens. You know, we always put, it seems like, the kitchen sink so you can look outside. And a lot of times on these older homes, there's no insulation down there. It's hard to get to that part of the house. And so that's usually where it kind of freezes around the kitchen. And if it's a crawl space, it might only be, you know, 18 inches, 2 feet. And in the one that I always got crawled into, my father-in-law liked to punish me by throwing me into those situations. And you'd crawl back in there and, you know, I've run into possums, you know, spiders, and there's all these cobwebs. And, you know, sometimes you would go in there with a propane torch, a plumbing torch. And that is the last thing you want to be using, because you can be heating pipes, warming them up, and it doesn't take really anything on these older homes with the dry wood to get like an ember started. And it may take hours, and then it bursts into a flame. I think I sent you a picture yesterday of – was that in Iowa? I can't remember. North Dakota, I think, one of the Dakotas. And somebody had gone down with a heat gun, and – a lot of people think, well, a heat gun, that doesn't have a flame.
Right.
So how's that going to start a fire? So they actually, a lot of them will go to 1,000 degrees. And then you end up starting something and you don't, it's hidden, and you can burn the house down. And so a lot of cases, if you don't feel real comfortable about going down and warming pipes up, you know, you can get online and some people will say, you know, you can use a hair dryer. Well, that's very, very tedious. But you also, some will say, but put a rag, you know, warm rags over it. A lot of cases that doesn't work. But if you don't feel comfortable and it's not really accessible and there's a chance that you possibly could start something on fire, then call a plumber.
Then don't do it.
and a lot of people will say, well, let's insulate them. Insulate the pipes, and that won't happen. In a lot of cases, you know, it's that's okay, but it's hard to put insulation for, you know, like homeowners a lot of times on corners, 90-degree corners, or even 45s, to get that insulation so that the cold air can't get there is sometimes very tough. So there again, it takes, you know, a little bit elevated skill level to do that. And if you
and
use,
what kind of insulation works?
It's black. It's called black pipe insulation. You know, you can go to a hardware store or whatever, and it's, you know, you can buy it for half-inch pipe and three-quarter-inch pipe. And usually they're about 3 feet long. They look just, well, you know, they look like those beach toys, you know, where people slap each other around with those
the
things.
Noodles.
There
right.
you go, noodles. There, thank you. I'm getting too old for those things. So, but they just slip right over the pipe. And then there's an adhesive usually that seals the seams together, and it's recommended to do this on all new houses anyway, or any house to save, you know, heat energy for off your hot water. But some people have been using heat tapes, and you know, you buy them like say 100 feet, and they'll wrap 100 feet long. They'll plug them in, and then they'll wrap them around the pipes, and sometimes they forget to turn them off or. There are some times where those will possibly short out and cause a spark. And a lot of insurance companies, if they find out you've got a heat tape somewhere, they sometimes were pretty sensitive about that, let's just say. And I didn't really realize that because we used to put them up in gutters all the time. And then a friend of mine was an insurance agent. He says, you can't do that anymore. Because of the possibility that there might be a fire. So the best thing is a heat gun. You know, you can buy those pretty cheap. And it has usually a digital readout. And they go from about, say, 200 degrees or 120 degrees to about 1,000. And it's got a digital readout, tells you where you're at. So just turn the heat down to, say, maybe, you know, 300 or so. And that'd take a little bit longer. Copper pipe likes to split. And a lot of times it will split just enough to send out a real small stream of water. And in some cases, you don't really know that it has split. When you, let's say you turn the pressure on a little bit, if you've gone around the house and you know there's no water or anything and it still froze up, then you could turn the pressure, water pressure on a little bit, and then go ahead and go around and you know where it's frozen and thaw that out. Have all the faucets on. So that it relieves all the pressure. Because if it doesn't have pressure for as it's thawing out, it'll just split the pipes even worse.
All right. So okay, let's say worst case scenario.
Yeah.
The pipes, well, this is not necessarily the worst case scenario, but the pipes have split.
Right.
And you know that there's been leakage somewhere.
Right.
And boy, I saw a lot of nightmare pictures.
Yes.
In the last few weeks of some really terrible damage.
Right.
I mean, we're talking tens of thousands of dollars mm-hmm. worth of damage that can happen. But let's say you didn't get that bad, but you've got some moisture somewhere.
Right.
What do you do?
The first thing you do is you get on your phone and call the insurance agent, because a lot of the policies, if you don't call them within the first 24 hours, they're not going to help you out with any water damage. So if there's any damage, you think even the possibility, say, hey, you know, my pipes froze. But I want somebody to come over and inspect that because I do not want to have moisture in the house, because if it gets into the wall, then you could possibly have the mold, wood rot, the drywall. The worst case scenario is wherever you see the wet, you know, a wetness, like say coming out on a floor in a bathroom, especially in the old, you know, back years ago, we used to put a lot of plumbing in the outside walls and that would freeze up like crazy. So if you see water stains anywhere, immediately, like say, pull the trim off and then cut the drywall out. You know, you don't want to care about, hey, I don't want to have to worry about how much this is going to cost to repair my drywall. Get the drywall off up to 4 feet high. Some people say, well, just go up 2. You might as well go up 4 feet and find the seam where most sheetrock or drywall board, gypsum wall board is put on, you know, in 4 foot heights. So find, just go up until you hit that seam, but open it way up and get some air on it to dry this thing out. If you get it right away, you can get this dried out, but you have to eliminate the water and you have to be able to get it dry again and then worry about the repairs. You know, the first thing is you've got to get rid of that possibility of mold and other water damage, because a lot of our bill, I was just looking at a picture this morning from a new client that in his attic, there was so much frost in his attic that the water was draining down the walls inside the house, coming out into the basement on the floor. And so that can happen with plumbing as well. So if there's some plumbing pipes anywhere in the house, not even the outside walls, but the inside walls, somehow there's an air leak in an outside wall and the cold air comes through, say, a floor joist cavity, it can freeze a pipe in the middle of the house, burst, and go all the way down the walls into the basement, take out, you know, the flooring underneath your tile floor, and you don't know about it. So you've really got to go around and do a real thorough inspection and look for dampness anywhere. So before the cold weather season hits, you want to go around and inspect everything so you know what it looks like now. There may be water stains, maybe even from construction when it was built. You want to know what's there now so you have something to compare it to down the road. Take pictures and document everything.
Right. So let's say we've, you know, either unfrozen the pipes, we've repaired the damage or paid the plumber. Of course it's going to get this cold again.
Sure.
What do we do? What's your favorite prevention?
Favorite prevention is get warmth where the pipes are, or put the pipes where it's warm. If they're a lot, if they're in an inside wall, which we don't do anymore, I mean, you cannot do that unless you absolutely have to, and then you've got all kinds of special ways to keep the pipes warm. Get the pipes away from an outside wall. Get the pipes away from where there's cold and insulate the pipes. And have you may even replace the pipes just so that you can move them somewhere. Hey, you have to cut down the air leaks, because even a crawl space, if there's no air blowing in from the outside, usually they're not going to possibly freeze. I mean, they'll get very cold because they're built so bad there's heat coming from upstairs. But if there's air blowing in, like holes around where, say, maybe dryer pipes go out or any other penetrations or an old rock foundation, you know, where the air comes in.
You're describing my house. All right,
hey, there we go.
Yep. So seal it up. Insulate your pipes. Get them away from the outside wall.
And don't hesitate on calling a plumber. Really, I mean, you think he can do it? You may not. So get them involved so they can fix these things. They've got experience in it.
All right. Well, if you have frozen pipe questions or questions about any of the other home improvement projects in your life, things you're planning on doing, things that are on your list, maybe give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today to answer your questions. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here with us today, ready to answer your questions. You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we're going to start off with Glenn on the line in Garner. Hi, Glenn.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
Good to hear you guys. Since it's radon sensitivity month or something, we tested and found that our numbers were high. So we're in the process of looking at mitigation.
Okay.
Because I have several questions. We just filled up or caulked the expansion joints in the basement. So we haven't tested since then, but we will. And my questions are, there are some really fine cracks. How does one go about trying to seal those?
Okay. Well, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, really the only way to mitigate effectively for Iowa is to put in a mitigation system where you depressurize your basement slab and your foundation walls, where they'll put a pipe into your floor, into your sump pump. And then a fan will create suction, because radon goes right through concrete, whether it's got the cracks or not. I mean, concrete's really hard if you fall on it and everything, and very dense. But gas can go through it, and you just can't find enough, caulking in that to seal up an older home. If it was a newer home and they put a heavy, like a 10 mil poly underneath it and sealed it perfectly. That's just another part of a radon system. But the only thing that's really going to work effectively is a radon system. And in most cases I've been running into, they've been charging, you know, around $1,500 to $2,000, depending on a house. And that's just an average. What I see, it could be higher depending on the house. But
sure.
The other thing that we've noticed is from radon specialists is they get a lot of calls like a year later that how much drier their basement is once they put the system in, because it just slapped us in the side of the head. Well, you know, it's pretty obvious now that we think about it, is since there's a suction caused underneath your floor and around the foundation, when it's pulling the air, and which has the radon mm-hmm. in it, it's taking the excess moisture vapor with it too. So it's actually helping to dry, you know, your basement as well as eliminate the radon. And so when we go out and tell people, you know, we're just saying we're putting in a moisture mitigation system because there's still a lot of people that don't believe, you know, in radon and its effects. And you know, that's okay. But still, this system is really has so many other benefits. In the past, we used to try and caulk and seal. And then if you miss one crack, then it's you still have it. Just curious, what did it come back at for a level?
Around 60.
Oh, 60, Pico Curious. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Is that an area you spend a lot of time in?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I'd get that. I would, if it was me, I would say, you know, get the mitigation system, and then you don't have to worry about it.
Now, do any of these active monitors useful?
You know, I still have one sitting there at Iowa Central Community College. I think we bought in the mid-90s. It's still running. They are. But, you know, it radon and any gas or anything that comes into the house is affected by so many different things. The pressures inside the house, the atmospheric pressure, the time of the year. If you had a reading of 60, I wouldn't worry about anything else. Put the system in. And if you want, just go ahead and buy like a 30-day. Set it on a chair, you know, in that area that you're talking about, and test it again. But most mitigation systems will drop it down to, you know, zero. We've done it on some very tight homes before, just with a ventilation system, slightly positive pressure of the house, and put the gas out. But if your house is older than, well, if it wasn't specially designed, you know, just do the mitigation.
Yeah, no, it's not terribly old. And we do have an air exchanger.
Okay.
And I'm not sure how balanced that is as far as pressures go.
Sure. And you know, that the thing is, you know, the air exchangers, like heat recovery ventilators and energy recovery ventilators, you know, if they're balanced, you know, that's the way they're supposed to be. But even if an air-to-air heat exchanger is a slightly negative or slightly positive, a lot of times, depending on how loose the house is, you're still going to be able to, you know, the radon is still going to be able to get in. They still bring you fresh air, but it's pretty tough to get rid of the radon.
All right, so you recommend the mitigation?
Yeah,
system.
The mitigation system and just have that peace of mind. I mean, I'll feel a lot better if I know you did it.
All right, so, Glenn.
Thanks a lot
for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call with your questions. Chris is up next in West Des Moines. Hi, Chris.
Hi there. I have a 1979 two-story home in West Des Moines.
Okay.
And last fall, I for some reason I went up into the attic, and I discovered that the bathroom ceiling vents exhaust into the attic.
Yeah.
They didn't run them to the side of the house and get it out of the house.
Sure.
So I really done some research, and I think that's got to be done.
It does, yes.
But my real concern is that there's blown-in insulation in the attic, maybe 5 inches of it or so, and it was moist. And the underside of the plywood on the roof was moist.
Sure,
and
sure.
I'm concerned about mold.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, we don't live in the attic. So I'm wondering how seriously to take this. Should I, you know, vacuum out all that insulation and put in rolled-in insulation when we hard pipe those vents? What are your thoughts on all of that?
Well, You know, that was really common back in the 70s and 80s to not – it just seems like almost every attic we go into – that vintage, they just ran them up in the attic, and all that moisture, like you're saying, especially if you know somebody likes, say, take a 20-minute shower, that underside of that deck is just saturated. If you, I tell you what, is it cellulose insulation that's in there now, blown cellulose, or is it fiberglass, blown fiberglass, the white stuff?
I would say it's more like cellulose.
Okay.
It almost looks like sawdust.
Okay. Here, the good thing is the cellulose, sometimes when it gets wet, especially, it'll kind of just thicken itself on the top, and everything down below is still dry. That's one advantage to the cellulose. And if you put that bathroom vent fan in, that should eliminate – it's going to eliminate the – hopefully eliminate, depending on other issues in your house. You know, at that age, we very seldom air sealed properly around any lights or wire penetrations in the attic, which is required now by the energy code. Some builders are still doing it. They don't, since there's no enforcement, then they really don't care about following the code. But there's a lot of moisture gets in that way. So that is one of the issues, you know, you need to take care of, is get rid of that moisture coming from the bathroom. So when you run that bathroom vent, you should run them out the roof. And look at the manufacturer's instructions, the manufacturer that you have, on what type of pipe, what size of pipe, how to insulate it in a cold climate, and what type of roof hood to put on so that you don't have moisture coming back into that pipe when it's cold. Some people run them to the overhangs, you know, to the soffit. And we used to do that all the time. The bad thing is when you throw it out the soffit, if you have attic ventilation, it goes out and then it comes right back up through the same vents, the soffit vents to the left and the right. So on government projects we work on, if you run it out in the soffit, you have to go like 6 or 7 feet to the left, 6 or 7 feet to the right, and not have vented soffits. So you got to close those off so that that moist air can't come right back up in the attic and saturate just what you were trying to eliminate.
What if I ran it out the other side of the house?
Like out of gable?
Gable end.
Yep, that's perfect. Run it right out of gable, but you want to insulate those pipes. A lot of people don't. But
because
I've seen some houses where they didn't insulate the pipes, and there's just drywall tape coming down and everything. But so put that system in, and then if you're up in the attic, you know, run that and see how it is in the spring, and check it during this winter. And if there is a lot of if it's that insulation's really wet, pull it out and put blown back in. Don't put bats back in because they just don't fit the cavities perfectly. You want to put a blown insulation back in. So if any of the wet insulation, take it out.
Okay.
I mean, that's the safest way. A lot of people will just say, hey, it'll dry. And it might, but it takes a long time for cellulose once it's absorbed moisture. It's the same as bus bedding, you know, that we put night crawlers in when you have those. So you've got to get the wet out. I wouldn't worry I wouldn't worry too much about mold or anything like that right now, but I'd get the wet out.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
That's very helpful. I appreciate it.
Sure. And when you're looking at, if you change that fan out, I'm not pushing any products whatsoever, but you want to look for something that's quiet. And some of the units, like Panasonic Whisper Green, I'm just saying that one because that's the one that I know of that I use. I'm not pushing any products at all, but that they do make a heat recovery ventilator system that you can put in to help ventilate and dry the house down as well. So take a look, just do some more research. You may want to replace that fan and put a really good one in, especially if that's the original.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Jeff is up next in Des Moines. Hi, Jeff.
Oh, good morning. Well, number one, anything in Des Moines is going to have mines and caves underneath. So I live in an older house that basically is not airtight,
okay,
for God's sakes. But there is – so any radon is mitigated just up through the house and blows through when the wind blows through. I have a pipe that goes to a downstairs bathroom, and it freezes every year, because it's next to the garage.
Okay.
And I sometimes put a string down the throat of the tank, and that keeps the water running. But nowadays, with more expensive water, I basically close the door of that bathroom. The heat heats up the room, and I put a lamp underneath the pipe so the light bulb will warm the pipe.
Okay.
And that seems to work. All right. But,
okay.
When you have an older house, there's no drywall because it's all plaster and lath.
Sure.
So, you know, you just have to hold your breath on whether you're going to have any. We just replaced the water line upstairs because we have steel pipes. It's a 100-year-old house.
Wow.
But they got all filled up, and so we had to replace it with PEC. Just the cold, the hot water going upstairs. Probably someday, maybe the cold water too. But it's just sort of fight. It's whatever you can figure out and have the ingenuity to head off the plumbers and the people who want to make money off you.
Yeah. Sometimes it is a real fight. We've run, in older homes such as yours, where we used to run into a lot of problems is when somebody would come in and run security lines. If you had a garage next to the house like you, they would go in the attic of the garage and then punch their security wires down through an outside wall, exactly the same wall as yours, and run, and I don't know why, usually the same one that has the plumbing in it, so they can run their wires to the basement and have their controls down there. And a friend of mine had to do the exact same thing that you're talking about because his vanity was on that wall shared with the garage. And until we crawled up in the attic of the garage, we didn't realize that the security guy had pulled all the insulation out of the wall so he could run his wires in. Maybe if there's a way, if you could get from the garage side to that wall cavity where the plumbing is and somehow maybe put an air barrier there. It's just I can't see what you have. But sometimes if you stop that air, because the cold air is more dense and it drops down. So if you were to put an air barrier of some sort up above the pipes, that may help too. But, you're using probably just a regular light bulb, and those are, pretty hard for that to be unsafe usually.
Well, sometimes opening the cupboard doors and making sure that the heat gets where it needs to be.
Yeah, run the water just a little bit, a trickle. It's just like Jeff says, it's in some houses, you just have to do the best you can.
Jeff,
right.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Jeff, for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Mary's on the line next in Altoona. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I live in a 1949 Beaverdale brick, but I'm kind of out in the country a little bit here, surrounded by fields. And we have a tile basement. And the previous owner painted the tile.
Okay.
And it's starting to just, it's all falling off. The paint's just falling off the tile. And so I'm wondering, okay, if we go, and should I just, and our basement is truly a basement. I use it for laundry and storage. It's not, there's no bedroom down here or anything like that. But I'm wondering if I take it all off, just because it looks really bad, it's kind of falling on the floor. Should I just leave it plain, or what do you do with a tile, basement? Do I put anything on this or just leave it? We've never had any water in the basement, so it's a dry basement.
I love tile basements. When my dad built the house that I lived in when I was a kid, he built that in 1964, and it was tile block. And I think that's the prettiest basement that you can have, And they're structurally super strong because the way they're built, when you put the mortar, when the brick sits on top of the one below it, it has all these tongues and grooves. They're just laterally so much stronger. But if it was me, I'd get all that paint off and just let it show, because especially if you're not having any water issues, I think it's pretty. Doggone it.
But, all right. It's all right.
Yeah.
She'll take your advice. And
sure. I would get rid of it. I just think they're great. Yeah. I bet, you probably pay three times the amount what they're worth in Chicago or New York, or, go to Pinterest and you'll see that, or some do-it-yourself channel.
All right. Here's an email question. I need to re-insulate the box sills under my outside floors. I've used fiberglass insulation in the past, but that's gotten shifted and cobwebby over time.
Good.
I'd like to redo them. Is there any new material or technique I can use?
Yeah, and I'm glad that's a really good question, because in the past, to save energy, you know, years ago we had a big energy crisis, and we were told take some fiberglass bats and stick them up there between your floor joists. And until we had some cold weather, we thought, hey, that's a good deal. What the insulation does, especially fiberglass, think of it, it's just a big filter. It has R value, no resistance to heat flow, but air goes right through it. So what was happening, and it still happens today in a lot of new homes even, is if they put a fiberglass bat up there, warm air from inside in the basement goes through the fiberglass and hits the box sill. The insulation is keeping the box sill cold, and so then there's condensation and rot.
All right, well, we'll talk about new materials that we should use instead as soon as we get back from a break. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, ready and raring to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here with us today. He'll be in Ames next week at the Alliant Energy Builder Training at the Gateway Center, Tuesday and Wednesday in Ames. You can find out more about that online at AlliantEnergy.com. And, okay, Bill, we were left in suspense.
Yes.
Just before the break, we were talking about why...
I know. It was hard to wait.
Fiberglass. Yeah. Insulation seemed like a good idea, but wasn't.
Yeah. No.
So what, and again, this is, describe the situation for us.
Okay. What we're looking at is we're in the basement, and we're looking up between the floor joists above the foundation, and we're looking at some fiberglass bats, you know, pink or yellow. And like I say, the warm air goes through, and the insulation is actually doing its job. It's insulating that box sill out there, the wood. And the warm air goes through. The insulation keeps the wood cold now. The room warm, but the wood cold. And then we get condensation. And I have some slides that show the wood so bad you can actually take your pen and poke it all the way through and see the outside, where the whole floor system and everything is compromised. So you can if you pull the insulation out, then you can either hire someone to come in and spray closed cell foam and fill the cavities. Or you can take some sheet foam, like the extruded foam, like that's pink or blue or green, and cut those to fit and put like four layers. So you'd have basically an R20 in those floor joists. Cut them to fit as close as you can and then caulk all the way around the perimeter, the edge, so that air can't get behind that. If you don't have – or the other method is if the fiberglass is cut perfectly to fit, you can go ahead and leave that in, and then if it's dry, and then cut one piece of foam to hold the fiberglass in and caulk around that. Then it's all a system, and then the air can't get in, and then it's not going to have the condensation at the wood. But that was just something that we did and we were told to do. And, you know, I still have the original bookwork and all that stuff that telling me this is the way to do it. But we didn't understand moisture flow back, you know, very few years ago for the building science side of it. But the thing is, if you see it, it's wet now, you pull it out and it's damp, pull it out, leave it out now, let it dry, you know, and then once it's dried, then you can go ahead and insulate it properly.
All right. Let's get back to the phones. 866-780-9100. Kirk is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Kirk.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. This is actually a follow-up question to a previous answer you had for a caller about radon.
Okay.
I'm new to Iowa. I've only lived here for a year, so and I love this state dearly. But I don't know, you mentioned about when radon varies by season. So when should you test for radon?
Well, you can test any time. And it's radon, you know, is really... Well, since you've moved here, Iowa has the highest average radon reading in the country. You know, people would normally think, you know, probably Utah or Nevada or something. But we have the highest average. And 4 picocuries per liter is the EPA limit of what they consider to be a healthy limit. And when you test for radon, they test usually in the basement. And the only reason they test in the basement is because it dissipates so fast that you get all these different readings. Let's say if you you could take a test kit, two identical test kits, set one by a, you know, if you have a sump pump in your house, you could put one right next to the sump pump and then go 6 or 8 feet away and set it on top of a chair. You might get 300 picocuries per liter at the sump pump. You might get 2 picocuries only a few feet away on a chair because it dissipates so fast. So it doesn't take much in building pressure and air pressure. And, you know, usually usually during the year they vary. And so you really don't want to – you test any time. Usually the – you know, most of the time the readings are a little more elevated in the winter. And that's what a lot of people – some people say they're more elevated in the summer. It just depends who you talk to and what article you read. You know, it's just a kind of a rough idea. But it doesn't matter. If you have a test and it's over 4, if you're in that area a lot, you need to get it taken care of. If it's just an area that's in the basement and you don't go down there very much – then test maybe on the main level. But even if you only go down there a little bit, if it's above 4, put the system in, because I want the system, me personally, I'd like to see it put in every brand new house, because you can't pre-test for radon in the, you know, on the soil or a basement or anything. I just want to have those in there to help dry the house down, to eliminate that excess moisture in basements. Because what I really hate is going into somebody's house and seeing 3 dehumidifiers running in their basement, which just chew up electricity, when they could have the radon system, which costs much less to operate and put in.
All right.
But especially for indoor air quality, to get rid of that mold and, you know, mildew and that.
All right, Kirk, thanks a lot for your call. Here's a question from Laura. In the past year, our plastic water line in our refrigerator has split. The water has gushed and has gone through the ceiling downstairs. We've replaced the water line with various types of plastic tubing, but our trust level is low with respect to plastic.
I bet so.
Any ideas for a more reliable water line?
I would see it. So if I'm assuming it's coming from the refrigerator. Now, I don't know if they make the steel braided lines, because I don't have that on my refrigerator. If they make the steel braided lines for that application like they do for washers and dryers, I mean washers. So if you really read the directions on, like, say, a clothes washer, the lines that come with it aren't the ones they want you to use. They want you to use the steel braided lines permanently, but we always just hook the ones that come with the washer. You should have steel braided lines on your washer anyway. And so I would ask them, can you do that? Plus, a lot of the contractors use copper lines for that. In fact, the majority that I've seen always have a copper line going to it. So I'd ask whoever put the plastic one on, is there a way that we can have a copper one or a steel braided? And like I said, I would assume they'd make them. I don't know, a plumber or somebody can call in and tell us. But I would ask for that. Yeah, after one incident, I would be nervous as well.
All right.
I would be very nervous.
Yeah. Well, we've actually got a plumber on the line.
All right.
Ginny in Iowa City, although that wasn't what she called in to talk about. But do you want to weigh in on the water line to the refrigerator, Ginny?
Help me out.
Sure. I believe there's 10-foot lengths of braided quarter-inch line for refrigerator water lines.
All right. You should be sitting in this really fancy chair that I have.
And Ginny, I know you've been working with a lot of frozen pipes in the last few weeks. You wanted to share a little bit of your experience?
Yeah.
Sure. I've actually been working with them for 40 years now.
Right.
Good.
not the same ones over and over.
Repeat business.
No.
But I have learned that often people listen to the advice to leave their pipe water faucets trickling, and then they end up with a drain full of ice.
There you go. Yeah, that's a good point.
It's not a good solution.
All right. So, Ginny, what's your advice? I mean, obviously, you know, Bill was talking about getting the pipes moved away from the outside wall, insulation, things to prevent. If it's getting really cold and you've got pipes that are prone to freezing, what is your advice?
Well, I've helped people whose pipes have frozen because they're in a crawl space. And the safest thing is to set up a fan, just window fan, box fan, blow room air.
Oh, okay.
Anything above 32 degrees is going to take care of it. If there's cold air coming into the crawl space, then go around the outside, of course, and plug up holes or figure out why that cold air is coming in. But if you've got an opening to a crawl space, just shine a fan in there. I've helped a few people over the years, and that's as simple as it is. And now that I'm getting older, I don't even have to crawl into a crawl space.
Hey,
that's nice.
Since you're on, I want to ask you, you know, do you think when people are using the new PEX plumbing, does it withstand maybe a possible freezing incident better than, you know, the old plastic, you know, CPVC pipe and copper? Does it seem
certainly better than the CPVC, which was brittle.
Right, right.
The PEX, I've seen it freeze, and apparently it doesn't burst as often.
Okay.
But even copper pipe or even galvanized pipe doesn't always burst. So when you open your faucet and don't have any water coming out of it, my first advice is go open all the faucets.
Right, right.
And turn up the heat and open cupboard doors and expose anything that you can expose to get some warm air just from the house.
Sure, good.
Toward those pipes. And sometimes insulation works against people because the insulation can get cold if there's no heat. It doesn't matter how much insulation there is.
That's right. That's right.
All right. Well, Jenny, thanks so much for calling, and I hope you don't have to crawl into too many crawl spaces.
That's good. Yeah. Thank you.
And a nice warm basement today.
Good.
Oh, good. All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is a tweet from Shelley. She says, we had a sewer smell in the basement that coincided with the bitter cold. What might be the cause of that?
Usually it's a dry trap. You know, like in like your floor drains, the water has dried out. That's usually what it is. Now, I've got a friend up in Fort Dodge where the whole neighborhood is getting kind of a sewer smell. So I think the city's involved in trying to figure out what's going on there. But usually it's just a dry trap, because a trap is just basically a J where water sits so the sewer gas can't get back into the house, any of the sewer gases. So I'd go around and double check and fill those out. And it's kind of timely because what Jenny was just saying, what could happen is if you did let the water run, the trap could possibly freeze. And so if the trap freezes, then it drains out, and then the sewer gas can get into the house that way. So I'm glad she brought that up because that's something else to look for.
All right. Back to the phone. Sean is on the line in Riverside. Hi, Sean. Oh, I think we've lost Sean.
No.
Let's go to Nora in Mason City. Hi, Nora.
Hi.
What's your question?
I was sneaked a peek in an attic yesterday, and there's several handfuls of snow that apparently are coming in under the ridge vent.
Yeah.
And I wondered if that was somewhat normal. I've never experienced that. So, and is there a way to stop that from happening? Because one worries about that melting. It was a significant amount. I mean, you could have built a small snowman up there.
Oh, really?
Ooh.
Yeah, not a big one.
A small snowman.
Yeah. 8 foot tall. Okay.
No. Probably 8 to 12 inches.
Okay. Because if it's big enough, you can roll it up at the other end of the basement. That's pretty substantial. You know, it's when it gets really cold and we have that driving wind, the ridge vent or whatever type of attic ventilation you have, you know, it holds out the majority of the snow, but when it gets this cold and snows, the crystals are really, really small and they just fly right through that screen that's up there. And that snow will eventually, you know, melt, but then you'll have a little bit of moisture there. What a lot of people will do is they will take some house wrap, which will let a vapor flow through it, like something like Tyvek or something. They'll lay that on top of their insulation. Don't lay plastic over the top, but something like Tyvek, which holds water. The snow will sit on there till it melts, but yet if there's any air leaks below it, it's going to let vapor go through it. So that's how that product works. With plastic up there, you could have actually more issues. But you know,
not uncommon. Huh?
No, it's not uncommon at all. And usually, you know, you don't see it if it's a wet snow. And it's got to have usually have some pretty high winds like we had and that real dry snow. And you got to realize, you know, like 8 inches of that real dry snow is probably about, you know, 16th of an inch of moisture. So it's really usually not a big deal, especially if it's if you have cellulose insulation in the attic, because it'll just kind of cake and become real solid on the top and the moisture won't go down any lower. But I just, you know, have somebody run up and maybe put some Tyvek down there and maybe 6 foot wide underneath that whole ridge.
All right. Nora, thanks a lot for your call.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Sandy's up next in Kellogg. Hi, Sandy.
Good morning. I am having trouble with roots in my tile that runs from the septic tank to the laterals, tree roots.
Okay.
And they suggested copper sulfate. And I'm wondering how much to put in, especially during the winter, maybe when the trees aren't growing much.
That's where you've got me completely. This is a question that baffles me like wallpaper does. I really couldn't tell you. I would get a hold of, you know, I guess Iowa State Extension. I'd call Iowa State Extension and ask them, because they would know how to handle that with the tree roots and that.
All right.
And that's Friday.
Thank you.
Right? Is that tomorrow,
that's
Charity?
Tomorrow.
There
yep.
you go. Call in tomorrow and ask those guys and say, well, that goofball couldn't answer the question, so.
Thank you anyway.
Hey, thanks.
Enjoy your program.
Oh, yeah. We do. Thanks.
Thanks a lot for your call. All right. Here's a question from Elizabeth in Grundy Center. I have dated kitchen cabinets. There are many painting solutions on Pinterest, but I'm afraid to start this process if it will not last. So what do you think about repainting dated kitchen cabinets?
Well, it depends what they look like now, because it's going to be popular again in about 10 more years. So if you want to paint them, I would take one of the doors to wherever you buy your paint, take one of the doors there and have them see what kind of finish is on the door right now, because a lot of finishes do not work with other types of finish. You know, we don't know what's on the door. So I would take a door to them and say, okay, I want to paint it. I'm buying the paint from you. So tell me what prep I need to do so that it will stick. Because, you know, you do see a lot of painted cabinets where they use dissimilar type of products and then they start chipping like on the edges or where maybe even your thumbnail would catch something and then it looks horrible. So I would take the door to the paint, you know, wherever you're going to buy that and find out, because every product's different and you want them to stand behind it. So you've got to find out exactly what finish is going to match this. And a lot of times it's brand specific, their chemical makeup. And, you know, they'll be able to help you on that one, because just taking some rough advice or something out of magazine or Pinterest, a lot of times, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You know.
All right. You can be inspired by the idea,
yes.
But do your homework about the products that you're actually going to be
yes, and involve
on.
That
and
other
the prep work too, which is something that we hate to do.
Oh,
hate
yeah.
to prep a project.
Yeah, prep's no fun.
No,
that's overrated. Just like directions, you know.
right. Words to live by from
yep.
Bill McAnally.
Hey.
Bill McAnally, thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thanks.
And again, I want to mention that builders can learn more from Bill McAnally and others at the Alliant Energy Builder Training next week, Tuesday and Wednesday in Ames, Iowa. You can find out more online. Talk of Iowa is produced at Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.